The only mass outbreak of anthrax among humans occurred in 1979 in the Russian town Sverdlovsk. 79 people contracted anthrax, 68 of them died. 12 years later, American molecular biologist Matt Meselson and his wife, a medical anthropologist, were able to trace the outbreak from its source at a Soviet military installation to points 30 miles away. Matt Meselson says that understanding what causes such an incident takes not just time, but good old-fashioned detective work.
What we did mainly was really quite simple, though it was a stroke of luck as well. We obtained the names of the people who had died. We got those names because a local journalist had written a letter to Boris Yeltsin, who she knew because Yeltsin used to be the top party official in Sverdlovsk, and it said, "Dear Boris Nikolaevich, my constituents," because by then she was a member of the Duma, of the Supreme Soviet, "would like to know if that epidemic was the fault of the government, because if it was, they deserve to have extra pensions." So Yeltsin finally decided that, yes, it was a government responsibility, but now if you're going to give people extra money, you have to know who they are, otherwise everyone will ask for extra money. So there was a list, and at the bottom it said prepared by the KGB. And there were 68 names on the list and the address of where those people lived at the time of this epidemic. So Gene Gilman, who's a professor of sociology at Boston College and a research fellow at MIT, organized herself and two Russian professors, both women, and they went door to door and they asked in every family two questions. Was that person a daytime or nighttime worker? And where did they work? So that meant we could make a map. In fact, two maps. One map of where people lived. The other map, which is where they were likely to have been in the daytime. And on that map, almost all of those people fell into an extremely narrow zone, almost pencil thin, that went from a military biological laboratory, which was in the city, southward down to the city limit. And then we were given veterinary documents listing six villages where sheep had died of anthrax, extending out to 50 kilometers, 30 miles, south of the city. And all of these points were on a single straight line. And we had meteorological data from the local airport and the wind on one day, which was 2 days before the first case, was blowing in that same direction all day long. And if it hadn't been blowing in a constant direction, that's what I meant by luck, of course we wouldn't have been able to do that. But there was no other possible explanation than that there had been a release of anthrax spores from that military facility, blown southward by the wind, down into the countryside, killing people and sheep.
The U.S., for many years after World War II, was the leader in developing biological weapons. How did this country become involved in developing this technology?
The United States, during the war, had a very large program. We had a huge facility for making anthrax in Indiana, though it never actually made any. It was constructed because the British ordered 500,000 four-pound anthrax bombs from the United States during the war, but before any anthrax could be made, the war ended. After the war, we continued until President Nixon did an historic thing. In 1969, he didn't just cut the budget. He renounced the very option, and when he did so, he said, and these were his very words, "Mankind already holds in its hands too many seeds of its own destruction."
Well, wait a minute. If we, in effect, outlawed biological weapons, then why are these germs still in existence in various labs around the country?
Well, the germs can't be outlawed. They're made by nature, and also the study of them has many peaceful purposes. What President Nixon renounced and what a subsequent treaty declared to be illegal by nations was the hostile use, the use of biology for purposes that were not justified by peaceful objectives.
Well, who keeps track of this stuff, though, internationally?
Internationally, nobody. We have a wonderful treaty for chemical weapons, and there is an organization that keeps track. Nationally, of course, our CIA has the job of trying to keep track. It's not easy. And as to our own activities, there's a small committee at the Defense Department, which I hope is keeping track. It's supposed to. I don't know much about it. It's a very secret committee. We should have a treaty that holds individuals responsible. It makes it a criminal act for anybody anywhere to stockpile, use, or threaten to use a biological weapon. It's like piracy, airline hijacking, stealing nuclear materials. There are seven treaties like this. We should have an eighth one, which would hold individuals responsible if they make, use, or threaten to use biological weapons.
Matt Meselson, people are saying, just kind of in general, they're saying, oh, it would be so easy to attack the U.S. population with biological weapons. This would be, you know, could knock all these thousands, tens of thousands of people out. But in fact, it's not easy to do, is it?
Well, since it's never been done, nobody should say whether they know for sure or not. All we can say is that in the course of trying to develop effective biological weapons, both the United States and separately the Soviet Union had enormous enterprises, hundreds of scientists working for years and years in many laboratories in different locations. If any one individual knew how to solve all of the difficulties, that would make a big difference, knowing everything. I don't think there are many people who do. Each scientist probably would deal with some very small part of an overall program, and very few of them would have known how to solve all the problems. That doesn't mean that some individuals couldn't create a hazard. I don't have a crystal ball, but if anybody really pulled this off, I would be very impressed.
Matt Meselson is a molecular biologist at Harvard.